Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. And can you tell how excited I am? Because she's here. Not only has she played a role in changing the world of dog training, she's also a very good personal friend from It's Me or the Dog. It's Victoria Stillwell. Hi.
Hi, Steve.
I live just to introduce you. You do know that.
I know, and it makes me laugh every time.
What I want you to do is come to Chicago, and we've met in Chicago before, but I want you to come to Chicago and take a bus with me. And as you go on the bus, I can say, and it's Victoria Stillwell from It's Me or the Dog.
And everyone will give you very strange looks.
Oh, they do anyway, every time I ride the bus. There's no question about that. There is so much to talk about, and I want to lead off with a big event. You know, I was looking at your list of speakers, and it's like, how am I on that list? It's an amazing list from really all over the world.
Well, you're on the list, Steve, because you're one of those amazing people that you're a champion for animals, not just in this country, but around the world too. So that's why you're on this list. I asked you to speak. I know you've spoken before, but yeah. I am very excited to hear because, you know, I mean, obviously the conference is devoted to dogs, but you also, because you are an expert in both, you bring the cat element in there too, which is much needed. As you said, that many people that have dogs also live with cats.
Yeah, increasingly so. Although this year for you, I am only talking about dogs. I'm talking about enrichment for dogs. But let's explain what we're talking about in the first place. It's the Victoria Stillwell University. I don't think I have that right, do I?
Well, it's the Victoria Stillwell Academy, but it is. I mean, it's like a university. If you want to study and become a dog trainer, then you go, come study with us at the Victoria Stillwell Academy. But so it's hosting the Dog Behavior Conference. And this conference is, gosh, we're in our 11th year. And we have speakers from all over the world. It is an online conference. It started off in the UK as an in-person conference and was very popular. But unfortunately, because of COVID, we had to move it all online and it's never gotten back in person. And online means that it doesn't matter where in the world people are, they can come join and they can come and share in the knowledge that is it blows my mind. You know, I've done this profession for so long, yet every dog behavior conference, I learned something new because of our incredible speakers. So we have 12 speakers over 3 days. I host it. You don't have to be there in person all the time because that's 8 hours of knowledge a day. That's a lot. But once you register and the presentations go out live, you have a year to listen to all the presentations. But we also encourage you to attend live because it's a big community that we build during the conference. It's not just, oh, you come in and then you get like shoved to rooms into presentations and that's it. You join in with the chat. I get to know you. You can ask questions of our presenters live. It's just a really great community and it's a great event.
Now, some of the speakers, I don't know that. And by the way, I want to make an important point here. You don't have to be a dog trainer, although many dog trainers from around the world will be there. You don't have to be an aspiring dog trainer. You can just say, I like dogs and want to learn more. And this is a great place to do it. So you may not know the speakers' names. I'm going to mention a few. I'll let you mention a few because we don't have time for all of them. And some of the topics that they'll be talking about. I missed him when he was just in Chicago. I wasn't able to go see Mike Shikashio. He will be talking about, I would suggest, because it's his wheelhouse, dog aggression.
Yes, hostility in the home, especially towards family members or towards visitors. Now, we're seeing an increase in this. And I do think it's because, you know, dogs really aren't supposed to be confined. I know you know that, Steve, but they're supposed to be predators and roaming around in the wild and mating and eating and doing what dogs do. But domestic dogs don't have that luxury and they can't. It's not safe. So we keep them in our homes confined. When we're outside, we keep them confined on the lead. And unfortunately, this can lead to frustration. And if there's a lack of socialization and the dog feels a bit nervy or fearful, then you can have issues, especially when visitors come to your home. But also dogs are resource guarders, just like humans are. And so we see a lot of that kind of aggressive behavior towards family members because dogs are protecting things that are valuable to them. So Mike Cicascio, who is an aggression expert, is going to be talking about that. And as you said, this isn't just for dog trainers. In fact, half of the people who come are dog lovers. They have an issue with their dog at home, or they just want to learn more, or they're vet techs. We have quite a lot of veterinarians. Oh, yes. We have groomers. We have all kinds of pet sitters and everything. So you just learn a lot. And that's what I love about our presentations, because they cater to all levels.
And you've got some of the best people out there, including a veterinary behaviorist in the UK. You know him well. I think if I said, hey, Dr. Mills, I'm not sure that he'd recognize me. He might. I've met him before. Dr. Danny Mills, what? And he's world renowned. What will he be talking about?
Oh, yeah. He's going to be talking about pain, the link between pain and behavior. Now, get this statistic. The University of Lincoln, where he works, and he's spoken at the conference before. He's an absolutely amazing mind of information, this man. But he's going to be talking about that link between pain and behavior. And they've done numerous studies, and around 80% of aggression cases that they see in vet surgeries in the UK are linked to some kind of pain or discomfort somewhere in the body. 80%. So if you suddenly see onset of aggressive behavior, or even if your dog is exhibiting behavior and, oh gosh, you're like, this is dangerous, or this is upsetting, or this is weird, or it could be linked to some kind of pain or other medical condition. And that's what he's going to be talking about.
You know, what I say to people all the time is anytime you see a change in your dog or cat's behavior, the first thing to do is to see your veterinarian, because behavior doesn't just change because the dog or cat gets up one morning and says, I want to confuse my people. There's a reason for it. And often, not always, but oftentimes, Vic, that reason is medical.
Yes, it is. And that's why we also have Sarah Heath, because she's going to be speaking about different medical conditions, not just pain, and how that affects emotional well-being of our dogs. So it's all related. And I do think that or pain that's not recognized, undiagnosed pain, when trainers see dogs, many don't actually think of that before they start doing a behavior modification program. And then it doesn't work. And why doesn't it work? It doesn't work because there's something medically wrong. I mean, think what you feel like when you're in pain, or when you're nauseous, when you don't feel well, and you know, that's going to be reflected in your behavior. It's just that dogs can't say, I don't feel good. They're very good at masking pain, because masking pain is important for survival.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs don't want to show that weakness, as it were.
And it's always
that's why it's hard.
Yeah. And it's always been thought that dogs will always tell us when they're hurting. And as you point out, that is absolutely untrue. We don't have time for the list of all the speakers, but you could see them on your website. And also you can register for what we're talking about. How do you do that?
You go to dogbehaviorconference.com. dogbehaviorconference.com, and you can register, and it's $139 for 3 days. As I said, you have a year access to those presentations, and 12 of the best speakers. So it's an amazing price for the amount of knowledge and the level of knowledge you're going to get.
I mean really, truly, I was surprised when I saw some of the names, and I thought, what the heck am I doing here? I mean, these are the best of the best, which include you, of course, dogbehaviorconference.com. A lot more to talk about, including some controversial topics, when we come back with the one and only Victoria Stilwell on WGN. From It's Me or the Dog on Animal Planet, the one, the only Victoria Stilwell is right here. You know, I told you something that you hadn't heard about, and then I saw something that I've never seen before. It was a video call. You and I were on that call with your husband, Van, and I told you about something happening in San Francisco. And then what I saw was a little dance. So I'm going to, and I was impressed with the way you dance. It was very unique. So what I'd like to do is have you make a promise. If what happens in San Francisco passes as law, which we'll talk about in a second, will you do that little dance publicly?
I'm going to do that dance publicly. I'll do whatever. I'll make that little dance a big dance. I'll be so excited and so happy and so truly amazed and gobsmacked that I will dance, yes.
And we are both on the same page with this, and that is the banning of electronic collars or e-collars or shock collars, whatever you want to call them, in San Francisco. San Francisco is now considering such a thing, and the hope is if San Francisco passes this, and they may not, but if they do, and they might, then the entire state will do it as well. Why do we want, and you and I both want, these collars banned?
Well, this is a lot. First of all, I say that shock collars, electronic collars, e-collars, whatever you want to call them, are banned in many countries around the world. And actually, there's a ban that is in place. It hasn't started yet in the UK as well. So shock collars have already been banned in Wales. And then England is soon to follow suit, followed hopefully by Scotland. And then we'll see about Ireland as well. But because obviously Ireland, Southern Ireland, is not part of the UK. There's a reason why. And the reason is that when you look in the label, it gives you all kinds of disclaimers and all kinds of like, don't use this if your dog has X, Y, and Z. Don't do this. Don't do that. Chance of aggressive behavior if you do this and you do that. And so it's not only the behavioral effects that we see from shock collar use and how unethical it is. It's the damage that can be done to the dog long term from the use of these collars, even when they're used, quote, properly. And so for people who really don't know what like shock collars and e-collars are, they're worn around the neck most of the time. Sometimes they're worn around the tail, but they're worn around the neck. Those are the ones that are mostly sold. And they can be used for invisible fences and other, fences that if you need to contain your dog and you can't build a big fence, they can be used for that. Or they can be used for training and dealing with behavior issues. So if your dog lunges, you give a correction on the collar, which is a sensation around the neck that delivers a sharp sort of stab in the neck. That's what it feels like to stop the dog from lunging. And you might see a change in behavior. You might go, oh my God, that's incredible. That's stopped the lunging. Well, actually it doesn't. It just masks it. It just suppresses it. You have to find out the reason why the dog is lunging, right? Why is the dog lunging? Is it uncomfortable? Whatever. But this is unethical and it's painful. So it has a dial and you can put the dial up to 1, 2, 3, or 10. And unfortunately, what happens is if people don't see any change in behavior at 1, 2, 3, they tend to put the dial up. Now we're getting into territory that is actually abusive. And so it's used as a corrector for behavior. People don't like behavior they see. It is a corrector of behavior, but it's also a threat to correct behavior. So most of these collars have a tone before the shock comes to say, hey, a shock is about to come if you carry on with this behavior. And then some of these collars are also used in training. They're used with what we call negative reinforcement, which means that if you want to teach your dog to sit, the collar is depressed and you say, sit, 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 until the dog sits. And all that time, the dog is getting shocked. And then when the dog finally sits, that pressure is released. Absolutely grotesque. People trained dogs for years and years and years before these dreadful collars were created. But here we are now.
Yeah, here we are now. And there is a reason why, as you point out, all these countries all over the world, you can't even think about using them. I mean, nobody does anymore because they've been banned in many cases for quite a while. Interestingly enough, in 2020, Petco announced they are no longer selling these devices for, quote, ethical reasons. It's interesting when the manufacturers who are fighting very hard, no surprise, this ban on shock collars in San Francisco, in part because they know it's not only because they don't want it to happen in San Francisco, they know that the way things go, it'll happen in other cities in America, because most dog parents have caught on to what this is. They call it not a shock, but rather a static correction. But you know what? A shock by any other term is still a shock. And while it can moderate behavior, boy, the collateral damage that you refer to can be significant for the lifetime of these dogs. So you can solve one problem potentially, at least for a time, but create an assortment of others, Victoria.
You really can. So let's say if you are walking a dog along the street and it sees another dog, it's reactive to other dogs anyway, and as it goes to lunge, you correct it. Well, what have you actually taught the dog to do? You taught the dog that when it sees another dog, something painful happens to it. So now it's associating dogs that it didn't was scared of anyway or didn't like anyway, and it doesn't like them even more, and it's scared of them even more, because each time it sees them and goes to do something about it, then it gets corrected with a painful shock. And now you have created a dog that's even worse on the lead because you've just tried to, again, suppress behavior. And what trainers like myself do, positive trainers, is that we try and find out the reason why the dog is lunging on the lead, or the reason why the dog is biting, or the reason why the dog is doing the kind of behavior. And then we work to deal with the reason. All right. And that addresses the symptoms, which can be the lunging. So, and I think that the arguments made by those manufacturers, which of course they're fighting us in England too, believe you me, they're fighting hard, is that, that shock collars are vital for dogs that are on death row, or that, you know, have really big behavior problems, and positive trainers can't deal with that. And that could not be further from the truth. It's a ridiculous argument, because we're dealing with extreme behavior all the time. And in fact, when you use shock on extreme behavior, you're just going to make it more extreme.
All right. Well, I want an update on what's going on in the UK as far as shock collars, and we will get that. And you'll be shocked to hear it on WGN when we come back with Victoria Stillwell. Next week, from the Association of Pet Obesity Prevention, Dr. Ernie Ward will be here. Why are so many, and incidentally, how many pets? I'll tell you right now. The numbers are, for dogs, 59% are overweight or obese. For cats, 61%. So why is that so? And, you know, it used to be, well, don't give them table treats. Well, yeah, but that's not the essence of the issue. So what is? And we'll talk to Dr. Ward about that, see if we can get to the bottom of this. Also, Jackie Acciacola, who is the executive director of the Every Cat Health Foundation. There's a big event coming up, an event that you can attend virtually having to do with cats and pain, arthritis pain, gastrointestinal pain, eye pain, believe it or not, pain related to kidney disease. There's a whole long list, including dental pain. She'll explain what that's all about next week here on WGN. From It's Me or the Dog, Victoria Stillwell on WGN. You know, your television show, when it came on at just the right time, because there was another guy on TV at the time who was using equipment like shock collars, managing dogs in a way that, well, was concerning, if not downright inhumane, and wasn't long-term necessarily effective. I was just at a conference, a veterinary meeting. You know, I speak at a lot of those, Victoria. It was the Midwest Veterinary Conference. I had the honor of sharing a track with Susan Friedman, who in the world of training dogs and understanding dog behavior is an icon. And she said, I asked about, she was talking about dog emotions. And I was talking about the fact, and this is interesting to me, and I will see if you knew this necessarily, that a dog that you're walking down the street, and a dog that you go to pet that's lifting maybe the right paw off the ground just a little bit, and the tail is down just a little bit, and maybe looks kind of stiff. And if you read dogs well, you would know this dog really doesn't want to interact. Then there's another dog, a couple steps down the street. And you look at that dog, and that dog's lunging at the edge of the leash, barking, growling. Yes, the tail is down, but saliva's coming out of the dog's mouth. I mean, we are hardwired to stay far away from those dogs. It doesn't take a genius to know that dog doesn't want to be pet. Well, what's interesting is that both of those dogs may share the same level of cortisol, which is the stress hormone. Now, cortisol is not the perfect measure of stress, first of all, but the idea and the point is that we all express how we feel differently, and dogs are no different. And I made that point, and Susan Friedman said, thank you very much. Yes, you're right. And she went on to comment about it, and she said, if you had only talked to Caesar Milan back in the day. And I said, in front of everybody, and I said, that's why I talk with you and people like Victoria Stilwell in front of everybody. So can you comment on all of what I just rattled off?
Wow. Well, yes, unfortunately, you know, there are other trainers, and there are unfortunately more trainers that are esteemed to be even worse. You know, social media, the social media age, they're just everywhere and doing dreadful things to dogs, and they have followings because, oh my God, it looks amazing and it looks like it works, and it's just awful. But I would say that every dog has a way of expressing themselves, and some are more overt and others are more subtle. And here's the thing, we should not wait for behavior to be more overt before we do something about it. Learning body language is vital. It's what I teach all my students, and it's what people will learn at the dog behavior conference. And, you know, learning what a dog is trying to say is vital. I call it listening. You have to listen to your dog. And just because behavior is more subtle doesn't necessarily mean the dog is feeling any less stressed or anxious. It's just the way they express it. But I would go even a step further. Even when the dog is just, you know, lifting its right paw, licking its lips, cowering a little bit as somebody goes to pet it, there are even signals before that that the dog is giving out. And it could be as much as a blink, a little head turn, a little micro freeze, something that is even harder for people to see. But that's kind of my aim, is to try and get people to recognize dog body language and not wait for the really major, mega overt behavior before they do something. Because those little signs are vital. And we see it so much when people go up and pet dogs. It's why I don't go up and pet dogs. I don't think people think I'm really unfriendly. I just don't. I wait for them to come into my space. But it's why people get bitten when they go, because, oh, the dog wasn't growling and lunging. It wasn't. It didn't do anything, the person says. It happened out of the blue. Bites never happen out of the blue. There's always a reason.
Well, you and I, as usual, are on totally the same page. And I feel so increasingly, I've always felt the way you just expressed it so eloquently, and I've always felt that, but more than ever before, because I'm concerned, because the number of dogs has gone up, but the number of dog bites in relation to the number of dogs, at least in this country, I don't know about the UK, has gone up even more. And it's worrisome, and that includes fatalities. You know, not that it's an epidemic. You know, what I learned is, I think it's forklift trucks. More people are run over by a forklift truck than die of dog bites, but one is too many. And what I also learned, you may be interested in this, because it is a statistic from the UK, and I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I swear that it's true, that more people actually in the UK are injured by their trousers falling down than are bitten by dogs. I can get you the details and the source for that if you'd like. I don't know. Don't you guys have belts in the UK? I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, we do. And I'm so glad you called them trousers. Everyone's going like, what are you talking about, Steve? Because, of course, we call pants trousers. And when we go over there, and when I go back to England and I say, oh, I like that pair of, those pair of pants, people think I'm talking about underwear. Pants means underwear in the UK. So I'm so glad you said trousers, because it would be really bad if people's pants were falling down, as in UK pants. Anyway, that would be very odd.
It's still very odd.
It is very odd. Shocking, shocking. But yes, you're right. Look, dog bites are on the up and up because there are more dogs than ever before, especially since the pandemic. And also, they are, as our lives get busier, there's less time for enrichment for the dogs and for dogs to be able to do what they do naturally. opportunities to do that. But also at the same time, fatalities are increasing a little bit. Now, in the UK, we've had a big problem with fatalities. And there's, again, unfortunately, a knee-jerk reaction. And there's an XL bully ban has gone into effect. Now, we've seen how breed-specific legislation doesn't really work in the UK. Pit bulls have been banned there for 25 years. But, oh, my goodness, now they're going to ban another breed because bites are going up. And we've seen in various parts of the United States that this is the case as well, that bans actually do not work. It lulls people into a false sense of security. And so I think it was in Denver and Cincinnati, these bans were repealed. So how do we tackle dog bites? We must tackle them with education. And as much as we try and educate, YouTube is very powerful and more people are posting fun things of children and pets and their children and dogs. And it's devastating when you see what parents or adults are allowing their kids to do around dogs.
I do a whole talk on this thing. And, you know, first of all, let me back up a couple of steps. And I think I mentioned to you, we were on a panel together talking about dog bites in conjunction with Dog Bite Prevention Week. And we don't even have time to go through the entire list of reasons why dog bites, at least in the U.S., I suspect it's similar in the U.K., are on the rise. But what we do need to teach people to do, so forever and ever, I can't even figure out where it came from or exactly when it started as a marketing initiative, I think, I'm not sure, by the American Veterinary Medical Association, to ask, can I pet your dog? And that's totally the right thing to do. But we need to add one more thing. Ask the dog.
We need
to look at that dog like we both have been talking about and educate everybody. Dog trainers, I would argue, even veterinary professionals, even, but most of all, the general public. What is that dog saying? Does that dog want to be pet? And you mentioned the perfect, you know, professionals know, for the most part, to wait until the dog comes into their space rather than to approach the dog. I want to pursue this and talk about dog bites more when we come back with Victoria Stillwell on WGN. Victoria Stillwell is from, you know what I'm about to say?
Go on.
Hello? I think she couldn't take me any. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, so you ready?
Yes.
From It's Me or the Dog on Animal Planet. And yes, one of the great dog trainers, one of the great people I have met. And we're talking about dog bites and our mutual concern about the increasing number of not only dog bites, but dog bite fatalities. And there are going to be repercussions of this. First of all, some children actually have a fear of dogs, a phobia of dogs. And it turns out they are the ones that get bitten that are more likely to have the fear. That's not a surprise. Also, I would argue, and I want your comment on this, that dogs are emotionally traumatized, particularly if they bite family members. I don't know any dog. I've never met a dog that gets up in the morning and says, here, this is what I want to do today. It's in my Outlook calendar. I want to bite that little girl who lives with me.
Violence is not the norm in the canine world. It is actually quite abnormal. And why is that? Because violence, if you're talking about wild dogs, violence, or feral, I should say, violence is actually can this harm is survival. Because if you get injured, if you start a fight and you get injured, then chances are you might not make it. You might die, right? So it doesn't. It's not good survival for the pack. And dogs in our domestic homes, they're no different. But sometimes you don't give them another option. And especially when I've talked about confinement before, but if you really think about it, dogs display quite a lot of the stereotypical behaviors that animals display when they're confined in zoos. Not against zoos, they're really good zoos, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying we're seeing a very marked similarity between some of the behavior that we see animals performing in zoos and some of the behavior that we see dogs performing in homes. And that inability to get away, to put significant distance, to have a voice to say, I don't want to say hello. I don't want to be in this room. I don't want to have this other dog come say hi. I don't want that child coming over. That's taken away. And so the dog is given no choice. And that's what we have to look at. We have to look at the dog's role in our modern homes today, how to make that easier, how to make it safer. Because we can, and you can put up baby gates and you put the dog behind a baby gate or in another room and you can do physical safety like that. But until the dog feels emotionally safe, then there's always that chance that that dog could use that defense mechanism, which is to bite. And so you have to learn about, and that's what I do with the behaviorist. I learn about what kind of dog I have or I'm going to be working with in the home, and how can I create ways that I can keep that dog physically safe and people physically safe and emotionally safe. Because there's no point in doing physical safety if the dog's not emotionally safe as well.
Are dogs always communicating with us?
Pretty much. I mean, pretty much. Behavior is of reactions, of biological reactions to the environment. So we are behaving. Humans are behaving all the time. 24 hours a day, we are behaving. And our dogs are doing the same. And we communicate with each other. You don't have to say anything to anybody. But people who know you especially, and even if you don't know someone, people are pretty good at reading body language. That's also important for survival. We're not very good at reading dog body language, and some dogs have absolutely no idea what we need from them or want from them or are going to do. So that's why it's really important to kind of understand the signals that we have and understand the limitations that your dog has and the fact you are living with a different species. People don't think about this. You are living with another predator in your home, a very effective predator, two predators living together. Sometimes it works beautifully, and other times it really doesn't. So that's it. And let me just talk about very quickly when, you know, we don't go up and say hello to dogs. We wait for dogs to come to us. So if a dog comes into my space and has wiggly body language and says, hey, I want to say hi, what I'll do is the three-stroke or pet rule. I'll pet them three times on the back of the neck or the back, and then I stop. And if the dog wants to be pet more, it stays with me and says, can I have more? And if it doesn't, it walks away. Even if a dog that's a bit stiffer comes to me and says, hey, I think I might want to have a connection with you, the three pet rule and then stop. That will really help keep you safer.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. And that's in part of what I'm talking about, too. It's amazing how you and I don't talk, but we're completely in sync, because that's absolutely. You know what? During the pandemic, so many people, and I'm glad, adopted dogs or had dogs. But there was a lack of socialization in that period of time. I think that's part of what's going on here. Part of what's going on are things that people wouldn't necessarily think about, like more multi-pet homes than ever before, including multi-dog homes. And it turns out bite numbers have always been higher in multi-dog homes for whatever the reason. And now we have more of those than ever before. It turns out dogs are more likely to bite in warmer weather. I had no idea, but I found that out. And we've had more warmer weather than ever before. So there are lots of reasons. Before we run out of time, I do want a quick update about what's happening in the UK as far as the electronic shock or shock collars, because they need to be banned there. Where are we politically?
Well, politically, the ban was supposed to go into effect in February, but there has been some stalling going on. And we are desperately hoping that the government will keep their word. But all I can say about it is that there's lots of work going on the ground. And so watch this space.
How does it look?
It looks good for us.
Great.
It looks good for us. But there's also, you know, the shock collar industry are very powerful. And so they are, you know, speaking in the ears of some of these lawmakers. But I know that what is right will pass in the end. Sometimes it takes a while, but there's a lot of very good people on the ground doing very good things. So I am confident that it will pass. The government have promised us it will pass. It's just that we have to make sure that it does.
And one more time to register for the Academy.
Yes, the Dog Behavior Conference. Go to dogbehaviorconference.com. It is April the 19th to the 21st. 3 days of the most incredible information online only. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, in the nation. You can have access to all of the presentations after they've gone out live for a year after. So do register dogbehaviorconference.com and hopefully I'll see you there.
Okay, there she goes, the most incredible Victoria Stilwell. Thank you. I've talked about this before, and we've had expert guests talking about something called xylitol. It's an artificial sweetener, and it's wildly toxic to dogs. It can kill a dog and do so quickly. Now, we've always said, look on the packaging to see if, and I'll explain what products in a moment might have xylitol labeled, and if it does, definitely do not purchase for a dog. People can tolerate xylitol. I'll explain all that too. But for whatever reason, xylitol on many packages is being called birch sugar. I don't know why, but it is. So watch for either the name xylitol, which is spelled with an X, or birch sugar. So according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Center for Veterinary Medicine, in both people and dogs, the level of blood sugar is controlled by the release of insulin from the pancreas. Yes. In people, xylitol does not stimulate the release of insulin from the pancreas. It's different in dogs, and that is the problem. Now, I tell people appropriately, get low salt, low fat peanut butter, and maybe low sugar, and stuff it into that toy for something for the dog to do. And a lot of people do that. Make sure xylitol, that's the number one problem with peanut butter, but now make sure that birch sugar isn't there as well. Xylitol can also be found in chewing gum, candy, ice cream, dietary supplements like gummy vitamins, which sometimes dogs get a hold of. Here's something to watch for when compounding medications. Hopefully the compounder knows when preparing like liquid gabapentin not to include any xylitol. Sugar-free candies, breath mints, etc. But peanut butter is the big one. And we will talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.